VoiceAmerica.com.
Prepare to turn on and tune up your baseball mental and technical knowledge and skills. You have just tuned into Championship Thinking, brought to you by the National High School Baseball Coaches Association. Now welcome your host, Jim Meyer.
Again, welcome to October, listeners to Championship Thinking, and those that know this to be fertile land for growing your internal thought processes and also matters of the heart. Again, welcome. This is Jim Meyer, and our show tonight, title, Chess as a Tool for Developing Baseball Intelligence. I'm pretty pumped about this show because I'm an awful chess player, and so I'm going to learn more about it from our guest, Michael Albrecht. Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
You happen to be in your office in it's Fredericksburg, Virginia, is that right?
Yes, sir, Fredericksburg, Virginia.
All right. Well, you know, Omaha, by the way, had a lot of rain, and now it's just sunny, and it's got a little cooler, but we've had 80s yet here. You know, you never know what can happen in Nebraska, but people say that in every state, don't they?
Absolutely. We're in the middle of a drought here in the Old Dominion, Jim, so
okay.
You can send some of that rain our way.
I understand. Well, for our listeners out there, Michael, I'm going to just give a real short thumbnail background on a person who's done a whole lot of work in his early life, and because he's younger than me, folks out there, but not that young, actually. But Michael has written nearly 400 articles for Baseball Almanac, over 40 studies on the history of baseball, an online ebook, so you got to be excited the Yankees are in the playoffs. Luckiest Fans on the Face of the Earth, History of the New York Yankees in the Fall Classic. Currently, Michael, tell people what you're doing with the Civil War studies you're doing, because you're doing an extensive amount of work there, too.
Yeah, currently, Jim, I've been doing a lot of work. Living in Fredericksburg, Virginia, I'm literally within a 20-mile radius of four of the major battlefields. So we're sort of Civil War central here. In fact, our tourism tagline is the crossroads of the Civil War. It's something that I've always had an interest in, and over the years, as I became more experienced and more established as a baseball writer, I decided that I was going to explore, you know, other avenues of history, and Civil War history for me was a very good fit. What's been nice is I've had the opportunity to sort of bridge the gap. I have a rather long feature in this month's Civil War Historian that talks about the origins of baseball during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So every once in a while I have an opportunity to sort of blend both of my interests together, the history of baseball and the war between the states.
Besides raising a family and playing your chess occasionally.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, those sort of things, I understand. Well, again, thanks for being on the show. A lot of room to cover here.
Yes, sir.
But let's talk about baseball itself. What attracts you to baseball? I mean, you've written this many articles. There must be something there, huh?
Well, you know, I thought about that. I've pretty much been a baseball fan for as long as I can remember, Jim.
Yeah.
Although I like to consider myself a sort of a transplanted native Virginian, I was actually born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And anyone who is familiar with the Steel City in the 1970s, they know that the Pittsburgh Steelers really were the team that owned the hearts and minds of that town.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we still had a great baseball legacy. We had Bill Mazeroski's famous home run. We had the...
They beat your Yankees, you know.
yes, they did.
Okay.
You know, we had the legacy of the great Roberto Clemente.
Who was his son was a guest on my show in April.
He was an amazing man, amazing man, and the city of Pittsburgh still embraces him today with the same love that they did whenever he played in Three River Stadium.
Yeah, what a legacy.
He was a wonderful guy. Yeah. So at the time, I really didn't have a good team to root for. You know, we had that 79 team, the We Are Family, that took us to the series.
Yeah, the Stargell years.
We had a few good players, but for me, it really was more about the players. Growing up, I sort of gravitated to individuals. I loved watching Mike Schmidt and Gary Carter, Dave Parker and Andre Dawson, and you know those guys to me were sort of superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, I sort of got more interested in the history of the game and the legacy of the game, and that's when the New York Yankees sort of fell into my lap, and I just became hypnotized by the stories of Lou Gehrig and Mickey Mantle.
Sure.
those guys are probably the reason I became a baseball writer.
Anybody
you know, who studied the team, it's really hard not to just fall in love with the sport.
Well, in the world of sports psychology, which I do, and in my workbook, Michael, Championship Thinking, Building Mental Muscle in Baseball, I quote Lou Gehrig. Got a picture of him there.
Mm-hmm.
And he says something real close to this. A ball player that loses his head and can't keep his cool is worse than no player at all.
Absolutely.
So I got that one positioned under Concept 13, Emotions Management. You know, so, but then he was at German, you know.
That's right.
Just go out there and, you know, you just tough it out and don't lose your head. So I see. So you gravitated. Well, you went east a little bit.
I did. And
okay.
Then I played, you know, like most American boys. I had the local Little League, and I was a first baseman and a third baseman. I did a little catching and some middle relief pitching. And I was an average ball player. I wasn't anybody that really sort of stood out, but I loved to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I took a fastball to the face by a guy who ended up, I believe, trying out for the St. Louis Cardinals. And that was sort of it for me. I was forever spooked in the batter's box. I gravitated into a softball league that was also available. And I distinctly remember getting beaten by our girls' high school team. So that was about the end of my baseball career.
Ah, there's some very good girls that play sports out there.
They're fantastic.
You know? But I understand the point.
Yeah.
Well, so you eventually hung up the spikes and found a you certainly are blessed and talented with a pen.
Right.
and a mind that drives that pen. So that's your spike today, I guess.
Absolutely.
Well, so let's first talk a little bit about chess and independent of baseball. I guess, what do you like about chess?
Chess, for me, it was really a game that I really never thought of playing until I became a young adult.
Mm-hmm.
I was very fortunate because I had a friend who had played competitive chess in the military. So he was not only a great player, but he was sort of a great mentor.
And, okay.
He actually sat me down. He probably showed me more than I could have ever learned from a book. And it sort of became my golf. You know, guys will go out on a golf course and sort of torture themselves.
Sure.
And chess for me was a much easier form of torture. So
it can be.
It requires the same amount of patience but less walking.
Well, you know, life is so many decisions.
Yes.
I mean, of all kind of nature. I mean, I'll finish the show, and my wife is going to ask me, what do you want, something to drink with dinner, you know, and I'll have to make a decision, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to, you know, I might be paralyzed by it, you know. Water, milk, glass of wine, I don't, you know, but that's not a very big decision, but it's still a decision. So
mm-hmm.
Chess, you got to move a piece, or you don't. I guess you can sit there forever paralyzed.
It was interesting to me because it was a game that required strategy, but it was also random,
mm-hmm.
Which really provided an opportunity to do what I like to call lateral thinking. That's two different types of thought. And if I did not have people who were willing to share the game with me, I probably would not have had the patience to stick with it. But these were guys who, you know, they taught me that just like anything in life, the more you play and the more you practice, the better you get. And eventually it became a very enjoyable game, and I was okay with being sort of mediocre at it. You know, I didn't have to win every game. I didn't even have to be, you know, the best guy in the room. It was just something that really sort of, it appealed to me, and it was a way for me to push myself and challenge myself in a way that I had never done before.
I started playing when I was maybe 31 or 2, when I was in a corporate job, and then as a winner, I'd play at lunchtime once in a while, and
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought, wow, here I am being humbled again.
Yeah,
you know, it's another one of those. So many sports that have these competitions in them, both with somebody else and yourself, are not designed for a person with really low self-esteem.
Yes,
you know, I mean, it builds a strength of mind, not only intellect, but I think resolve, to hang in there. So. Then there's those beautiful moments of wow, that move really worked.
Yes.
You know, but you don't. The thing is, you don't know sometimes until you execute it.
I think the chess is a very misunderstood game. I think people tend to look at it and they think that it's very dry and very boring.
Oh, wow.
I was probably just as guilty of that as anybody else. But it's a game that it really builds, and there's a certain level of anticipation that takes place. And like you said, there's a great deal of satisfaction whenever you are able to execute a move. You know, that's like parring a hole on a golf course. So, you know, you get the opportunity to par a whole bunch of holes on a chessboard.
Well, I'm racing ahead here on the point because we'll get there, but it's also like that pitcher that can finally set up a hitter.
Correct.
To get him with the changeup or whatever pitch, you know, but he's had to do that. I mean, he knows that going right at him, you know, with three straight fastballs down the middle, probably is not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is aggressive chess, though, and we'll chat about that. But well, good. So maybe I'll be fortunate, and you and I can sit down and play a game of chess someday.
That would be wonderful.
That would be fun because you learn skills. Let's see here. Let's get into the meat of what the show's about. It's, you know, chess as a tool for developing baseball intelligence. I guess it's a blending of so many things. Okay. But how do you see that unfolding? Let's start to build the connection here as you see it.
Well, I think that chess and baseball are really a lot closer to one another than most people realize. They're both a thinking man's game. And, you know, even Albert Einstein, I believe, you know, he realized the mental similarities between both games. And he said a line along the lines of, you know, chess grips its opponent, shackling the mind and brain so that the inner freedom and independence of even the strongest character cannot remain unaffected.
Uh-huh.
So when Albert Einstein sees a commonality there, you can't ignore that.
No, that's right, because he wouldn't have said that foolheartedly.
That's true. So, you know, once you can bridge sort of the psychological gap between the two games, there's a whole list of different skills that can be shared between the two. And a lot of those include, you know, strategy, patience, observation, trend analysis, and so much more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the anticipation, visualization. And I think we'll hack away at each one of those. You know, like a pitcher might hack away at those pitches he knows he shouldn't even try to put in fair territory. Follow it off and maybe get your pitch later. Back to Einstein real quickly, too. Wasn't somebody wanting to say, well, you teach me relativity, and I teach you baseball.
That's true.
How did that go?
I believe he said, "You teach me baseball, and I'll teach you relativity." And then he retracted. He said, "No, we must not, because you'll learn relativity faster than I can learn baseball." So I'm pretty sure that's how it went.
Well, it would take way too long. But in my organization development consulting, and there's a gentleman in from Romania attending a conference, and he asked if I knew anything about baseball. You know, he'd say, "Yim, you know, I know anything about baseball." And I said, "Well, a little bit." We spent 3.5 hours over a pizza and some beer, and I had to challenge all of my knowledge of communication skills, because but boy, it's really useful to have a lot of different salt shakers, pepper shakers, and those sort of things to create the visual field. And he learned baseball some that night. And I learned how hard it is to communicate about it. Somebody that knows nothing about the game. So we're at break already, Michael. And listeners out there, know, of course, you can call in. 1-866-472-5788 is that number. Call in with comments or questions. Love to chat with you. Stay tuned. We're on commercial break, and we'll be back momentarily.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
high-performance people have two points in common. First, they are dedicated to getting their thinking in shape and keeping it in shape. Second, they believe in themselves and desire to grow and unleash their talents. With 32 years of experience, the Training and Consulting Connection is committed to helping teams and individuals excel at these two points. You will benefit from TCC's sports psychology and business services and products. Each incorporates a proven process for achievement. This is the 4A process of awareness, analysis, action, and actualization. To contact the Training and Consulting Connection, email meier@tccomaha.com. That's meier@tccomaha.com. Or call 402-393-1998. Championship Thinking with Jim Meier is brought to you by the National High School Baseball Coaches Association. The BCA has been providing coaches with support, instruction, and recognition since July 1991. The BCA promotes high school baseball throughout the country. To learn more about the BCA's services and activities, visit our website at www.baseballcoaches.org. That's www.baseballcoaches.org. Coaches, don't forget this year's national convention is in Oklahoma City, November 29th through December 2nd. Follow the conventions link on our website for more information. Join National High School Baseball Coaches Association and think like a champion.
Ever wonder what are the favorite travel destinations of the Hollywood jet set? Where do celebrities like to go when they aren't walking the red carpet? Tune in to Traveras Celebrity Travel Talk with President of Traveras, David Manning, and Lisa O'Hurley, golf aficionado and wife of actor John O'Hurley. On Traveras Celebrity Travel Talk, David and Lisa talk with well-known actors, sports celebrities, and entertainment insiders to find out about their favorite travel destinations and what they recommend. On Traveras Celebrity Travel Talk, David and Lisa also offer up feature vacations each week and last-minute deals for your next getaway. Find out what's new and exciting in the travel industry, as well as how to raise money for your nonprofit organizations while enjoying a wonderful vacation. Traveras Celebrity Travel Talk with David Manning and Lisa O'Hurley broadcasts each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America channel. Traveras Celebrity Travel Talk, your inside look into celebrities and travel.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're back with Jim Meier and Championship Thinking, brought to you by the National High School Baseball Coaches Association. To call in with a question or comment, dial 1-866-472-5788. Now back to your host, Jim Meier.
Welcome back. Welcome back, one and all, to Chess as a Tool for Developing Baseball Intelligence. Mike Albrecht is our guest, a historian, writer of multiple articles on the game of baseball, and certainly a person who studied the game a lot. Kind of a double question, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I call you Michael, and I call you Mike.
That's all right.
There's a doubleheader that was played in Massachusetts about chess and baseball. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, a lot of people aren't familiar that back in the mid-1800s, chess and baseball were really the two most popular sports.
Mm-hmm.
In 1859, there was actually an intercollegiate baseball and chess match that was played simultaneously between Amherst College and Williams College. And Amherst ended up winning both games, and they were then, you know, forever heralded as the athletic and academic champions.
Wow! Yeah, that's and then you know, that's when academics may have meant even a little more across the board than today.
Certainly.
And then of course you're talking about the mid-1800s, right before the Civil War, and then you've been also learning a great deal about baseball and the Civil War. How about that?
That's really been the gist of a lot of the major projects I've been doing lately. There's so much mythology surrounding the origin of the game, and there's so many different interpretations of really how the game started, and all of it really comes down to a game that was played by soldiers abroad during the Civil War. A lot of people are aware that Abner Doubleday,
mm-hmm.
who was a general in the Union Army,
buried in Arlington.
Correct. And you know, he received a lot of credit for becoming the inventor of the game, as people like to refer to him.
Mm-hmm.
But it really, if you go back and study, Alexander Cartwright is really the gentleman who deserves the title as the father of baseball, whereas General Doubleday, he was more of a promoter.
Okay.
He was a gentleman who was a fan of the game, and he promoted the game abroad while his armies were on the march and in camps. And the boys that came into the war from places like Massachusetts and New York, they shared that game with the soldiers that they served with. So it helped them to sort of deal with the boredom of camp.
Sure.
It was a way for them to escape the horror of war, a way to pass the time in prison camp. Baseball was a very important thing to soldiers during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Probably the rules were different than today, but on the other hand, I bet you still ran to the right.
There's actually only two photographs in existence that I've been able to discover that have photographs of baseball games being played, but there's countless letters home and diary entries and minutes that were taken at different sections during the war where people wrote more about the ball games than they did about the conflict that they were participating in. So there's this wonderful
I can understand that somewhat.
And you know, interesting things like the game was interrupted by a cavalry attack, and we lost our ball and the center fielder. You know, those are the types of things that you would read in these letters. But it was a game that grew in popularity throughout the Civil War, and that was sort of the birthplace of the game that, as we know it today.
Oh, wonderful. Well, yeah, it's just the stuff out there that's just, well, again, you're out digging this stuff up, sometimes literally, but not so much that. Well, you are. You are in books and all kind of artifacts. Well, strategy. Let's check through these things you mentioned.
Okay.
I think, you know, the listeners out there, baseball audience, why should I pay attention to chess? Really? Why should I learn the game? How's it going to teach me to be more intelligent as a baseball player?
Yeah. Well, I think that strategy probably is the number one foundation of chess, and I would also I'd also agree that it's a brick in baseball's foundation as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily in the traditional sense of strategy, because both games, they're very organic. Chess, a player has an ability to sort of foresee a strategy and adapt that according to their opponent's game. Sort of having a plan that's an ever-changing puzzle, and as your opponent makes different moves, you're sort of readjusting your own strategy and your own game plan to sort of compensate for that.
Mm-hmm.
So you enter the game with sort of a general idea of what is to come, but it changes as the tone of the game changes. Your opponent could come out and he could have a very strong opening, and that immediately would set the tone of the game. And you're going to sit back and you're going to analyze their opening, and you're going to try to find a way to sort of turn the table on them by making a few aggressive moves of your own. And you do this because you're hoping to force him to abandon his strategy and have to adapt to you. So it's a give and take, and your job is to interrupt your opponent's strategy.
Absolutely, and I mean it is that give and take, and it's move, and baseball has this inning, top of an inning, bottom of an inning.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the opening and chess. You've got the first inning, two, three innings, setting the tone, so to speak. Sometimes things happen fast, you know. In that sense, I mean they happened that fast in the Mets the other day with Tom Glavine.
Oh yeah.
Seven runs on top of the first, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who would predict that? You wouldn't bet that in Vegas if you're a betting man. You know?
Not at all.
But it happens, and so you have to adjust, you know, to that. But you're right. So an opening move, chess, you know, it really advanced the pawns in the center at that style, and maybe get that queen out there. High risk, maybe high gain.
That's true. That's true. And risk is a very important thing. Much like a baseball coach would sort of position his players on the field and the way that he would, you know, fill out his lineup card, even the way that he would position his players throughout the course of a game to sort
yes.
of adjust for different types of batters. It's the same type in chess. You know, you may move your infielders in on a particular battle. Or I'm sorry, a batter.
Well, it is. But, yeah.
And in chess, you know, you might move your pawns out quickly and give your knights and bishops an opportunity to really, you know, make the kill move. So strategy, it's something that you can think about prior to the game. You can put together sort of a rough idea of how you're going to handle the game. Mm-hmm. But you have to be willing to abandon that.
Yes, you do.
You have to be willing to change your strategy and just trash it if you have to. And that is all based upon sort of that give-and-take idea of what your opponent is putting out there. Is he being risky? If he's being risky, you need to take advantage of that. If he's being cautious,
yes,
you need to take advantage of that.
One of the key concepts, Mike, that I teach in my world of sports psychology is the principle of locking on, locking out,
mm-hmm,
which is the focus part. But there's also another part of that is, you know, it's very, very wise for a person to learn to ask themselves the question, what am I, if it's active, current reality time, what am I locking, what am I locking onto too long here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what have I, you know, also sometimes we know we're going to talk about the issue, because this ties to the issue of patience and not letting it just unfold as well.
That's true.
I mean, this is where wisdom comes into play, and that's where analysis comes. And so the past tense is so critical, is it not? To ask those questions, what did I, if anything, lock onto too long?
That's true. Strategy is a fluid thing that is never set in stone. And 9 innings is a very long time, and there's a lot of things that can happen over the course of those 9 innings that were completely unexpected or unplanned for.
And like you said, I think calling it organic, and you know, for me, that just does means fluid.
Right.
It's you can have that plan. It's all wonderful on paper, and you ought to plan your work your plan.
Yes.
But then it's execution time, and then all of a sudden, whoa! Wait a minute here.
I always like to say, be ready to be ready.
Yeah. Exactly. I understand. I fully understand that. So we got the point of strategy, and we'll work right through that, but then that does lead to the question of for how long, and which is said another way, how patient need I be? Should I be? So how does chess teach patience?
I think that patience is probably one of the hardest things, not only to learn in sports, but in life, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to use my son, Dylan, as an example. Now, Dylan was not a baseball player growing up, but he was a very talented hockey player.
Okay.
And he was a goaltender. He did 4 years playing inline, which is a very, very popular form of hockey here in
yes.
the South. And
less ice.
Yeah, less ice. But the equipment is just as expensive. So,
yes, okay. You gotcha.
He was one of those kids that he showed some talent early on, and he had a great interest in the sport, and he really gave it his all. But he had some issues with patience. And at the same time that he had began to play hockey, I sort of taught him how to play chess, never thinking that the two of them would sort of cross over each other. But he ended up becoming very interested in the game. He participated in a chess team at school. He did an after-school chess club program. And
okay.
I actually saw the benefits of that on the rink.
How old was he at that time?
I think he was either 10 or 11
okay.
when I started to teach him the game. And I think he played up until probably a couple years ago. He's 16 now.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed that he was staying in the crease more. He was holding his positions better. He wasn't coming out too early.
Okay.
And in passing, I had commented on this, and he said, you know what, Dad, on chess club, we talk about knowing when to make the right move. And I started to look at the rink the same way I looked at the chessboard. And I looked at how the other team was sort of positioned in front of me, just as I looked at how the other players' pieces were positioned in front of me. So that's an example of how patience that he had learned in chess sort of, you know, were executed on the sports field.
Well, and also that speaks because you got to first be exposed to it.
Yes.
Again, I do a lot of work in teaching people to be innovative, and I use 18 different traits. One of them is expanded background of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he was doing. I mean, first of all, he first had to get the knowledge of chess.
It was a rhythm to him, Jim. He started to feel the rhythm.
Started to feel the rhythm. And then he had to make the connection.
Yes.
Which is also, I mean, you can have a lot of knowledge, but you have too many walls up in your brain.
Mm.
So you gotta let the information flow. let it help you in different worlds. Excellent example of patients. We're not talking about ADHD either here. We're talking about just basic people who don't have hypertension disorder or something like that. Michael, we're at mid-game.
Wow, flying by, Jim.
So time flies when we're doing this show. It tends to always be that way. So we're at break again. Again, callers, certainly feel free to call in to questions with Mike or myself. Chess is a tool for developing baseball intelligence. We'll be back momentarily.
Have you ever thought about having your own internet talk show? Well, if you said yes, then click About Us. Then click Be a Host to get more information. Or just call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417.
Say that again.
480-294-6417. VoiceAmerica.com.
High-performance people have two points in common. First, they are dedicated to getting their thinking in shape and keeping it in shape. Second, they believe in themselves and desire to grow and unleash their talents. With 32 years of experience, the Training and Consulting Connection is committed to helping teams and individuals excel at these two points. You will benefit from TCC's sports psychology and business services and products. Each incorporates a proven process for achievement. This is the 4A process of awareness, analysis, action, and actualization. To contact the Training and Consulting Connection, email meier@tccomaha.com. That's meier@tccomaha.com. Or call 402-393-1998.
Free yourself from the prison of your conditioned thoughts and destroy barriers that hinder your success. Tune in to Empowered Living, Life, Truth, and Being Free with host, speaker, writer, and personal coach Steve Maraboli. Steve and his expert guests take you on a quest for truth and highlight philosophies and strategies that help you release your greatest self. It's time to shake off mediocrity, destroy personal barriers, live up to your greatest potential, and align with happiness, success, and excellence with Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free with Steve Maraboli. Broadcasting every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America channel. Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. Release the power within.
Championship Thinking with Jim Myers, brought to you by the National High School Baseball Coaches Association. The BCA has been providing coaches with support, instruction, and recognition since July 1991. The BCA promotes high school baseball throughout the country. To learn more about the BCA's services and activities, visit our website at www.baseballcoaches.org. That's www.baseballcoaches.org. Coaches, don't forget this year's national convention is in Oklahoma City, November 29th through December 2nd. Follow the conventions link on our website for more information. Join National High School Baseball Coaches Association and think like a champion.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're back with Jim Meyer and Championship Thinking, brought to you by the National High School Baseball Coaches Association. To call in with a question or comment, dial 1-866-472-5788. Now back to your host, Jim Meyer.
And again, welcome back to Championship Thinking Land. The soil is fertile here, and it's especially fertile today with Mike Albrecht, and we're talking about chess as a tool for developing baseball intelligence. We've covered strategy as a learning tool from chess to baseball, the transference, patience, because a coach has to be patient. A manager has to be patient. I watched the game last night, the Padres game and the Rockies game. And, you know, at some point, there's also the notion of attrition. And my guest next week is Mike Boddicker, former pitcher, Mike, of the Orioles and Red Sox. And one of the things we talked about was what strategy, and that's using your resources, like in chess. I mean, sometimes you choose to sacrifice a piece, right?
That's true. There's really two parts to patience that we haven't really touched on yet, Jim, that I'd like to add.
Please.
One is sometimes being patient is knowing when not to do anything, and when to do something. You talked about the game last night. I'm sure that everybody in that ballpark had ice water rolling through their veins in the way that they handled the stress of that situation. But you really, you need to learn how to know when to move and know when not to move. I always talk about a gentleman who I played online chess with in a tournament. And this gentleman and I had several slugfests, as
okay.
I call them, that we played against each other leading up to this tournament. And we got locked into this game where we just kept moving over and over and over and over. And I started to just want the game to end.
We're talking about over weeks here.
This is over weeks. This is probably close to a month.
Okay.
And my patience didn't hold, and his did. And I started making some poor moves, and I started making some very bad mistakes. And the gentleman was very gracious. He sort of he took his time finishing me off, you know. But after the game was over, I sort of became friends with him, and he was actually terminally ill.
And, oh, my.
That really sort of put things in perspective. Here's this gentleman who, for, you know, all intents and purposes, was dying and operated with such grace and such patience. And that sort of taught me that, you know, if your opponent is willing to give it time, you owe it to yourself and time.
That reminds me, and I mentioned to you at a break, tell my listeners out there, there's a best book, well, one of the top five books, at least, I read this year. It's called The Immortal Game,
mm-hmm.
and it's a story about the history of chess. It's not how to play chess, but it's loaded with great research information, and there's the reason I'm bringing it up now is because the notion of what you do with your time. One of the first stories he tells is actually in Baghdad, the Emerald City,
mm-hmm.
where the city is under siege by the brother of the whatever his title would have been, not Shah or, you know, but Caliph or whatever it is. But
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, his assistants are all saying, hey, you know, we got to do something here, and you know, he was going to finish the chess game, and he did. And then he got beheaded.
Wow.
You know, you know, he used his time the way he wanted to, if you will.
Yeah, that's true. I just, you know, nothing really in life works if you're too impatient to see it through.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that true? Yeah. And then there's observation. And you know, how would you talk about, you know, I mean, connect this observation, baseball, and chess?
Well, observation really goes back to that idea of recognizing new opportunities as they
mm-hmm.
evolve.
Mm-hmm.
In both baseball and chess, there's opportunities that are constantly presenting themselves. And, you know, think about the endless possibilities that occur in just a single at-bat. You know, what is the hitter's assignment? Is he going to sac fly or bunt? Where do the runners go? Should they take a long lead in preparation for a steal? And then what happens after that ball's in play? So everyone in the field is sort of standing around waiting for something to happen, and they must be ready for anything. But they position themselves according to the observations that have taken place probably prior in the game. You know, a lot of these scouts go out, they know what these guys throw, they know how these guys hit, they know how these guys can run.
Mm-hmm.
They use that sort of as a basis for the placement of the players. But once again, this is a situation that is constantly evolving throughout the course of a game. And by using observational
yes.
skills, you can see, is the pitcher starting to show signs of fatigue? Well, the same thing in chess. Is your player starting to show signs of fatigue? Is he showing mental fatigue? Is he making, you know, rash movements, and is he making judgments that are poor? Is he not playing up to his level? Same thing with a pitcher. Is he not throwing to his level? So, you know, through observation, you can see what types of strengths and weaknesses your opponent is sort of showing you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it ties to that patience again, too. And you mentioned the word rhythm with your son, Dylan.
Correct.
My son, Tate, pitched in college, and he would change the rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, one of the early things we talked about is, remember, nothing happens. I mean, the pitcher controls that
mm-hmm.
part. You know, I mean, the umpire might tell you to speed it up or anything, but, you know, nothing happens in the game until you actually finally hurl the ball. You know, between pitches. I mean, it's all of a sudden time out and time in, and here we go.
That's true.
So you can switch that. The other thing I was thinking about, I hadn't thought about this in years, honestly, it's amazing. This was a Little League example, but I was trying to teach this notion of observation without calling it that. And we would look for times where we had, this is using your pieces, a left-handed hitter. We had two guys that pulled the ball quite a bit from the left side.
Okay.
And we had runners on second base, and this particular team had a good catcher, could throw a guy out going trying to steal second or third. But I would look for and observe to how much after the first time through the lineup, if their coaches switched their third baseman to move more towards shortstop, and he did, and then I knew the speed of a guy at second base, and we could have less risk in trying to steal third, and did that successfully twice,
because
the third baseman just couldn't quite get there, and manage the whole, you know, the whole physical reality in Little League of running, catching, tagging, you know,
fundamentals of the game.
Yeah, and so, you know, what we're trying to, in a sense, you're not throwing them off, but it's like all of a sudden moving a piece to on a different side of the board, and you're not even sure what it's going to produce for you, but you're making the opponent believe there's something going on there.
That's true. I know that, you know, a lot of chess players have a whole plethora of openings that they use all the time.
They're gambits.
They know how to do their openings, and they have sort of a set strategy for an end game. It's what happens in between where observation is really key.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the important things that the gentleman that I mentioned before who mentored me taught me was you need to focus on your opponent's game too.
Oh, yeah.
Find out what pieces he favors and try to attack those pieces first. In other words, if you can take his strengths off of the board, then he's not going to have those to use against you.
Yeah, some people really like to use their knights, and some people use, you know, it's so, yeah, it's like using your small ball game.
Yes, yes.
You know,
and this guy could tell you, I'm going to beat you with my rooks, and then he would do it.
Well, that also meant he had the skill.
Yeah,
exactly. But he would announce. It'd be like the old Green Bay Packers when they were so good. They would, we're going to run three plays. And,
that's right.
You know, we'll even tell you which one's coming this time.
That's right. Yeah. Needless to say, I don't tell anybody anything. So.
Well, I think, you know, the announcers will talk about Mariano Rivera's cutter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, frequently. Well,
everybody knows it's coming, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right. And this is why it's always a tit-for-tat kind of world out there, because it's such a battle.
Mm-hmm.
The pitcher-catcher thing is such a battle. And then a lot of things come around it. Trend analysis. Let's move there for a minute. You know, and maybe for the definition from a baseball perspective, what would you say is, when you think about trend analysis, what would that be for baseball?
I think the trend analysis, there's different varieties. This goes back to what you've learned, lessons learned from observation. If you have the opportunity to play somebody on numerous occasions, it's very easy to sort of put in your mind's eye what they're going to do the next time that you meet.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to Mike Boddicker today, again, the guest for next week, and we're talking about last night's game and Trevor Hoffman. And that's the point. One thing he told me, he says, well, of course, Colorado has seen him a lot of times. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
they play in the same, you know, division.
Well, trends take place on the diamond, and it's also within the ballpark.
Absolutely.
The ballpark itself can be a trend.
Yep. Yeah, and I think when we come back, I want to you know, have you give an example or two of that. We're at break again, 7-inning stretch. We'll be back momentarily, listeners. Stay tuned. We're talking to Mike Albrecht, and the topic, chess as a tool for developing baseball intelligence, something that is very useful for players, coaches, and, of course, parents and lovers of the game alike. Stay tuned.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
High-performance people have two points in common. First, they are dedicated to getting their thinking in shape and keeping it in shape. Second, they believe in themselves and desire to grow and unleash their talents. With 32 years of experience, the Training and Consulting Connection is committed to helping teams and individuals excel at these two points. You will benefit from TCC's sports psychology and business services and products. Each incorporates a proven process for achievement. This is the 4A process of awareness, analysis, action, and actualization. To contact the Training and Consulting Connection, email meier@tccomaha.com. That's meier@tccomaha.com. Or call 402-393-1998.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control, and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling, whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Championship Thinking with Jim Myers, brought to you by the National High School Baseball Coaches Association. The BCA has been providing coaches with support, instruction, and recognition since July 1991. The BCA promotes high school baseball throughout the country. To learn more about the BCA's services and activities, visit our website at www.baseballcoaches.org. That's www.baseballcoaches.org. Coaches, don't forget this year's national convention is in Oklahoma City, November 29th through December 2nd. Follow the conventions link on our website for more information. Join National High School Baseball Coaches Association and think like a champion.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're back with Jim Myers and Championship Thinking, brought to you by the National High School Baseball Coaches Association. To call in with a question or comment, dial 1-866-472-5788. Now back to your host, Jim Myers.
And welcome back, one again, one and all, to Championship Thinking. Speaking of that, I want to open up and say something about, well, here we are, it's October.
October.
And wow, tomorrow, right, Mike, what happens?
The real baseball starts.
A new season, you know. You know, we are now down to 8 total teams and a lot of ball to be played. So 3 games tomorrow. I'll be certainly tuning into some of those. Which kind of links to the notion of trends a bit. And some of these teams know each other more than others, you know, and they get the World Series and, you know, maybe they played interdivisional ball, but it's a little different again.
Well, I think that, you know, trend analysis is really having first-hand knowledge of what's to come. And on the baseball mound, you know, there's all kinds of different types of trends for different players and different teams. The ballpark itself has a trend. You know, does it have a short porch in right field?
Right.
You know, you look at the Green Monster at Fenway. That's almost another player on the team in itself.
Yeah.
Because people have played there and they sort of know how to work the field. And then, you know, preparation for other teams, you think about, okay, what types of things may affect this team? Are they a cold weather team? Are they a warm weather team? What type of factors might affect them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they play better during the day or the night? You could look at a copy of their schedule. You could look at their box scores and,
right,
and see if there's any clear trends that you could sort of use against them.
Well, certainly the statistics in baseball are just so multiple they can boggle your crazy little mind to the level of infinity.
Correct.
I mean, so yeah, but you're right. That's really becomes an intelligence to be able to glean from all that data, which,
yes,
some people would say is minutia. It's like a good financial advisor, you know?
Yes.
I mean, who can say, look at all this stuff, and you know, he's trained, hopefully, skilled trained, mm-hmm, to pull this piece out. You know, it's that pitching coach who can say, look at how this guy seems to be, you know, how he how he hits different when he hits behind such and such versus such and such.
I think that the great players, whether it's on a baseball diamond or you know, sitting at a chessboard, they themselves create trends. If you look at most of the good chess books out there, they're made up of games that have already been played.
Yes.
And a Kasparov or a Bobby Fischer or some of these grandmasters out there, they developed sort of a whole arsenal of different types of games that they put together, and these ultimately became trends for other players. So that's sort of how you separate the good players from the great players, because the great players invent the trends, and then they pass them on to everybody else, and then they move on and invent new ones.
Well, you're right. No, you're right. It's the what I kind of refer to as sixth and seventh levels of being able to answer why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of us in most topics, because it's such a complex world, yes, a child will ask you, well, why, and then you're answering why again, and after about the second or third why, unless you're an expert in that area, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You're head empty. You don't know anymore. Because we work and live off of assumptions. The person that is, like you say, the Bobby Fischer, you know, or maybe it's the Lou Piniella with the Cubs,
mm-hmm.
you know, who has all this history, or Joe Torre, or you go down the whole gamut here. As well as, you know, hitters studying types of pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And how they're feeling that day, you know. I looked at speaking of random, it wasn't random for him, but Rod Carew, the way he hit.
Yes.
I mean, there was a person that was extraordinarily flexible, not by at-bat, but by pitch.
Mm-hmm.
His stance, you know, where he put his hands on the bat, you know, that kind of thing. Well, there's an artist at work there, but it's also a mental artist, not just a physical artist.
That's true. That's true.
Lineup cards and move relationships. That's another example of chess and baseball.
Well, a sequence of opening chess moves, they call that standard openings. And
mm-hmm.
I believe there's 1,327 possible openings.
Yes. Well, when you look at this book, I told you, it gets to you. The first one gives you, you know, you only have so much, and then wow, in only about three moves each side,
mm-hmm.
you're at this level of infinity.
Well, those gentlemen that we just talked about, they sort of are the guys who wrote the move cards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had opening and closing relationships within their games that really worked. And it's similar to sort of how a manager would assemble his lineup. The way that a chess master would look at the board, and he might choose a King's Gambit as his opening, or a Latvian Gambit, or all these wonderful types of opening moves to sort of set the pace of the game. A skipper would do that with his lineup, and the way
yes.
that he selects the relationship of the hitters. You know, how he schedules his pitching rotation.
Mm-hmm.
How he aligns people in the bullpen. So, you know, you have players that are on a baseball field that are sort of, some of them are in play, and some of them are sort of on the sidelines waiting for their turn. It's important for the skipper to understand that lineup and the move relationship. They have to be willing to modify the lineup if required. It goes back to what we talked about strategy and how
right.
it's not written in stone. I always like to use the example of the 2002 All-Star Game. You know, there you had two of the best skippers in the game. You had Joe Torre and Bob Brenly.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, they had a pre-designated, you know, lineup and pitcher set up prior to the start of the game. And as the game continued to move on and on, they started playing everybody. And
yes.
they put themselves into a corner where they literally ran out of players. And, you know, Bud Selig had to call the game, and the rest is history. That's an example of not really being patient. Not using observation, not changing your strategy. So those guys really didn't stick to any of these principles we're talking about today. But the lineup card relationship, that's something that it's important, but it has to be like everything else, able to be cast aside.
Cast aside, and certainly always back to the notion of strategy, which too has to be potentially changed, cast aside. As the tactics of what's going on has evolved, so the lineup card in context again. It's always in context. I think For me, that's a real measure, Mike, of intelligence is mm-hmm. is it's not just having the knowledge, but you know, we're talking about the application.
That's true.
I mean, really, of that now. And again, our listeners out there, I guess you know, we could be doing literally hours on this topic of chess, period, baseball, period, chess and baseball, hours and hours and hours, okay? So I just recommend to you, I guess the whole point behind the show is that there's a great deal of advantage, maybe personally, for a team, for you, to understand this game of chess and think about it as you play it and learn it in the context of baseball, if that's your love, whether you're a coach or a player. It will benefit you, and that's why we've had Michael on, graciously giving of his time, his intellect, his knowledge, to also benefit you. And so I want to say thank you, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
It's just been an absolute pleasure. My guess is you're rooting for the Yankees?
I will be rooting for the Yankees.
Yeah, I understand that. My son's best friend, without question, is a Yankee fan. My son's favorite team is the Indians.
It's going to be a great matchup.
It's going to be a good matchup. So, listeners out there, next week the topic is, the title is Mike Boddicker, former pitcher for the Red Sox and the Orioles. Mike Boddicker on tradition, will, and matters of the heart. We're going to be talking about a new movie that's about to be released on a high school baseball team from a little town called Norway, Iowa. That releases October 12th. The show I'm doing is airing October 9th. Please stay tuned, and as always, Championship Thinking intends to increase your odds of happiness and success, and certainly pay it forward. Mike, thanks again very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Jim.
You've been listening to Championship Thinking, brought to you by the National High School Baseball Coaches Association, hosted by Jim Meyer. Thank you, and you are now ready to tune up your mental and technical game for more great baseball.